You're listening to the People Insights podcast from Cognisco with Owen Ashby. Cognisco is a people business. Through assessments, data insight, and evidence, we're changing the way organizations think about workforce transformation, learning, and compliance. In People Insights, we speak with some great guest contributors, looking at all aspects of the People Insights world. From leading psychologists and game-changing entrepreneurs who are challenging the status quo head-on, to leading practitioners from the fields of healthcare and professional services, through to the industry analysts and L&D thought leaders. We exchange ideas and debate current issues. And we'll be introducing thought-provoking examples, as well as exploring some of the more innovative and arcane areas of people insights, occupational psychology, OD, L&D, and HR, that we'll hope you'll all enjoy. You can access show notes from each podcast at cognisco.com/podcasts, where you'll also find a schedule of upcoming topics, guest appearances, and you'll be able to get in touch with us too. Oh, and you can find us on iTunes too. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter, at Cognisco.
In this episode, I'm speaking with Laurent Balaguer. Laurent is the founder and CEO of Formatris, provider of SaaS solutions to measure and improve learning impact for strategic and large-scale projects. He's helped hundreds of companies around the world improve learning performance through pragmatic, ambitious, and customized evaluation strategies. A graduate of L'École Polytechnique in France, Laurent started his career as a consultant with McKinsey & Company in France and North America. He then joined Faurecia, I think that's right, Laurent, as a lean manufacturing expert. It was during these first professional experiences that he developed his perspectives on corporate L&D and the necessity of implementing smarter analytics. As a learning analytics leader, Laurent regularly facilitates workshops, presentations, and panel discussions across Europe and North America. Laurent joins us today from his office in the US. Hi, Laurent. Thank you for joining
us. Hello.
How are things with you?
Pretty well, thank you. It's a good weather in North America these days.
Oh, yeah.
It's the good season, not too cold, not too warm.
Really, we're having largely torrential downpours, as is traditional at this time of year.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
And of course, to be talking about the weather is very much our thing. So, Cognisco and Formatris, one way or another, have been talking on and off for a couple of years now about how we see the world from a very similar perspective. Tell us a bit more, if you would, about Formatris, what you do as an organization, and what you've been up to more recently.
Yes. So, Formatris, I created Formatris more than 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And our mission has always remained the same. We work with corporate L&D teams mm-hmm. to help them measure and improve the impact of their learning initiatives. Mm-hmm. So that has always remained our mission. Mm-hmm. We've a SaaS solution, so we are a technology provider. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, what our clients have rolled out in terms of learning programs has changed a lot in in the past decade. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, this is why we've had to adapt our solutions, both in terms of learning measurements, impact measurement, and also in terms of support after mm-hmm. the learning initiative. But we still do that with a large scope of platforms to mm-hmm. from the, you know, the initial assessment and initial diagnostic mm-hmm. to the impact measurement, the business outcome measurement on a large scale for our biggest clients, and to more recently supporting the learners after learning initiatives mm-hmm. to make sure that they will transform new learning into a real change in their daily life.
Fantastic. What a great synopsis and summary. So over the last 10 years, you've seen that the way that people implement learning has changed in organizations, even in large organizations who tend to move more slowly, I suspect. How has that manifested? What sort of changes have you seen most particularly?
I will start with the obvious, technology. To be honest, you know, 10 years ago, e-learning was more a joke than a reality. I think when we were creating Formatris, it was the the third crash of the third e-learning bubble.
Right.
You know, the technology wasn't ready, the bandwidth was not ready, and the mindsets were not ready.
Right.
Things have changed on all these matters, and digital learning, we don't talk about e-learning anymore, but the possibilities in terms of technologies to support learning initiatives now are infinite.
Yeah.
And so that is clearly the first change. And, you know, the thing is that there's not one technology that is responding to meeting all the needs. Mm-hmm. But it's each of them is a response to some topics. You know, we can talk about virtual reality, serious games, MOOCs, and, you know, and 20 others. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, our clients now have a fantastic toolbox.
Yes. Yes.
At their disposal to build better and more adapted and sometimes more engaging learning programs and learning initiatives. That's the first thing.
Right. Yeah.
The second thing I would say is, and it's not only because of technology. You know, when I was 10 years ago, we were not talking about learning programs. We were talking about training.
Yes.
So we were, you know, looking at the world from the trainer's perspective, mm-hmm. or from the L&D perspective. Now, you know, it's really, you know, training is a word that nobody dares to talk and to use anymore. I understand why, because I think it's more and more learner centric.
Yes.
And that's a big change. So. Typically, that there was many consequences. Typically, we acknowledge that most of the learning happens outside the classrooms in the daily job of the employees.
Mm-hmm.
That the most efficient learning program has to be really continuous,
yes,
meaning not starting on Monday and ending the following day.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many consequences of this change of mindset, and mm-hmm. I'm sure there were other things that I would say, but for me, that's the two main changes that I've seen in the past decade.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's almost like that there's such a sort of plethora of technology being thrown at learning as an agenda. There are so many more decisions for people to make, both as a learner and as an L&D professional and as a buyer of any of those things. How do you think that sort of overwhelming level of kind of options for people impacts on their ability to deliver something that actually delivers a sort of cogent and tangible return on investment?
Well, there are many things to say on that. First, from an L&D perspective, I have some clients that you know that told me recently that for them technology was overwhelming.
Yes, exactly.
It felt them for them that every 6 months they had to change the methods.
Yeah.
And if they were not up to date, they could be blamed,
yes,
for not being, you know, up to date and to mm-hmm. be old fashioned. So it's mm-hmm. It's becoming more stressful for L&D yeah. professionals
mm-hmm.
Because of that. Because of the technology.
Mm.
There, you know, we could say that, you know, we could see L&D as a sort of intermediate between the people who need to know or to do a better job and those who have this knowledge, have this skill.
Mm.
And technology is also a way to remove this need of an intermediate. To say it otherwise, because of the change of culture, because of the new technologies, in some cases, L&D might not be necessary, might not be, you know, the necessary intermediate.
Yes, so, absolutely.
And I think this is also putting adding even more pressure on their job.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, the fact to prove their contribution, to prove the impact of what they do
mm-hmm.
For the, you know, the business, for the, you know, business KPIs, has always been here, you know, always. But it's more critical today than it was in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess it depends who's asking nowadays, doesn't it? Because when you look at Generation Y, Generation Z, if you like, expecting more and different things from their learning experience, more and different things from their employer, and potentially there's a greater demand for learning to be ever more exciting and ever more engaging if what you want is kind of adoption and take up. And yet potentially the business is looking at it from a completely different perspective that says, I care less about whether it's sexy or engaging or cutting edge. It needs to work. So how does, so the L&D professional, I guess, has got to look at it from both of those perspectives and address, if you like, a return on investment from the learner putting their time into the learning in the first place, and the business looking for some kind of tangible, measurable, operational return. So, you know, so to the two different perspectives they're trying to balance, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Both are partly right in a way. Clearly, there is this generation issue, and we know that, you know, the younger generations expect much more than the others to learn, to grow, to develop, and effective learning, useful learning, enriching learning is in the top of the agendas of these new generations.
Yes.
And this is probably something that I think L&D professionals are more aware of than the executives of their companies.
Yes, that's very interesting.
Of course, because that's, you know, that's their core activity, and that's also something that will make them more essential tomorrow than today. Mm-hmm. But clearly, you know, having we are starting to talk about the learning culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming, and I think it's just beginning, but it's starting to become an ambition in itself.
Yes, absolutely.
By developing and by enhancing a positive and rich learning culture, mm-hmm. you know, you'll be able to attract talents and to keep them and to have them grow in your company.
Yes, very much so.
And I think that this is something that L&D and HR people are starting to recognize.
Yes.
And but not yet.
Yes.
Executives and operationals. So that's one way of responding to your point.
Yeah, I guess
the other thing is clearly that professionals, my clients have their own internal clients.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the quality director, it could be the sales director, it could be sometimes the CEO.
Yeah,
they have a business need for today or tomorrow, and they're looking for help. They're coming for help,
mm-hmm.
Knocking on the door of the L&D manager.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some traps in that relationship. The first one is the magic wand.
Mm-hmm.
The internal client could see the L&D as a sort of magic wand. You know, my staff do not know that. My staff are not capable of selling this new product. Well, mm-hmm. I just need a learning program, and it would be like a magic wand.
Right. Absolutely.
2 days later, things will be here. Practices will be operational.
Yes.
As an L&D professional, we cannot accept to be placed in this kind of trap, because we know the likelihood of failure is high in such a relationship.
Yes.
So of course, you know, our internal clients, they have business objectives.
Yeah.
That's how they see the world. And learning professionals, they're experts of pedagogy, experts of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a sort of middle ground where you both can agree on, and in a way sign a sort of contract is on behaviors.
Right.
What are the concrete behaviors that your internal clients wants to change?
Yes.
Wants to improve or actually wants to have disappear in the daily job, in the daily life of their teams.
Yep.
And that's, I think, this is a way to basically find a common ground, a common agreement between L&D professionals and operationals.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. So we often see that people will jump straight to learning as being the cure-all of kind of anything, no matter what the root cause of the mistake or the behavior is. And we at Cognisco have done work with very large organizations, banks in some instances, where rather than actually uncovering what the root cause of a behavior or an act is, they'll simply put people through the same sheep dip process of learning over and over again. And we've got one really interesting example where actually, once they called us in and we were able to do the root cause analysis, we found that there was an error built into the learning itself, that every time they retrained the call center staff, they were simply compounding it. And what was worse was that they trained their managers and got their managers to drive those behaviors that were erroneous in the workforce too. And so, you know, millions and millions of pounds later, really beautiful e-learning and knowledge management systems, they've now got an entire workforce that's continuously doing the wrong thing. So I see that, and it's almost for me that there's a different vernacular as well between the L&D professional that's looking at ROI through one lens and the business imperative, the business owner or business issue owner that's looking for a different outcome, and how do we create a consistent dialogue, a way that both parties can understand that there what return they can see from any investment in learning.
I love your example. Thank you. It's really, I think it's a great example. I will reuse, in my conversations with my clients, if you allow me. But clearly, typically this idea of return investment, I think this is an obsession of some L&D professionals. Yep. And it is not an obsession for their internal clients.
Internal
clients are... they have business outcomes. They, of course, this is in the end what they expect.
Yeah.
But the issue with your ROI is that it's very defensive, and its only use is to defend your budget, to defend your job ex-post, and does not bring a lot of information about what happened well, what did not happen well, what could be improved. Mm-hmm. So this is really and by the way, it's most of the time impossible or too complicated to calculate.
Yes.
So we clearly don't think this is not the right way of engaging your internal clients, whether at the design phase of the project or when it's done. There is really coming back to the business outcomes expected, to try to make them as concrete and as precise as possible, and then deducing from that, what are the behaviors? And I really come back to that all the time with my clients. What are the behaviors expected? And, being very concrete, you want to improve, or to improve safety and to reduce the accident rate in your plant. Okay, so the objective is maybe to divide it by to divide this rate by two in the next year. What are concretely, the behaviors that we need to change? To achieve that, and the contract between the L&D and the business partner will be on these behaviors and not on the business outcomes, because there are so many factors beyond the learning itself that could affect one KPI up or down. You know what happens, when the KPI goes up, everybody raise their hand and say, it's because of me. And when the KPI goes down, they turn their head at, look at the neighbor.
Yes.
So you don't want to be trapped in this kind of, relationship with your business partners. Focus on business outcomes. And we've had actually situations and with our clients where, the return on investment was obviously very high, but still the behaviors that were expected after the program were not achieved.
Yes.
So the project was a success, but it was not... mostly because of the learning program, because it actually didn't contribute as much as it could have.
Yes.
And on the opposite, we had, typically, remember, a very large program in the farming industry, where the French government wanted to develop biogas for the farmers. So they launched the nationwide training initiative for the farmers, and no biogas units were built at the end of the year. For the government, it was a total failure. But when he studied, the behaviors, the learning program in itself was actually a total success, because it prevented farmers to launch into something that was far too complicated for them.
Yes.
So the learning program was actually a success, not exactly what the government intended to.
Right.
So, this is why, we describe as this chain of evidence. People learn, then they change their behaviors, and in the end, there will be a positive